show. Brett Baer for the Fox News Channel. And Brett is the, well, let's just run through a few things here. He's the host of Special Report. We knew that. Check.
Yep.
For on the Fox News Channel. Check.
Sure.
And he serves as the chief political anchor for Fox now. Congratulations
awesome.
On that.
Congratulations, Brett.
I don't know if that's a new designation or they just written that out for me
Did
for the first time.
I think they've just written that out for you for the first time. But thank you.
You're welcome. Now, and he's written a number of great books. He did one about his son's, his family's journey with his son's heart condition, which is just an amazing for any family who has kids who've had health crises in their lives. It is a special heart is what it's called. You cannot miss that book. And now he's got a book out called 3 Days in January, Dwight Eisenhower's Final Mission. And we talked a little bit about this in the fall as you were getting to finish on it. And I wonder, before we get into all the stuff that's happening, you know, in Washington this week, I don't know if you've heard, there's a big thing, I guess, at the end of next week that they're going to be doing. I don't know.
There's a big thing in Chicago tomorrow.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on. But before we get that, I want to talk about this book because I know you've been working on this for a while. And it's
3.5 years.
Yeah, it's a fascinating concept. So tell us what it is.
So this is a look at the 3 days that Dwight D. Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, delivers his farewell address 3 days before John F. Kennedy's inauguration speech. And in that farewell address, of course, the line that people point to all the time is the military-industrial complex and the concern Eisenhower has about that and about how it affects our politics. But there's a lot more in that speech. So what I did was look at those 3 days in a narrative. We found a lot of oral histories and letters and descriptions in the Eisenhower Library, the Kennedy Library, and it gives you like you're in the room, and use that 3 days and that farewell speech to bounce back and look at Eisenhower's presidency and all that happened. That I think for the most part, history for our generation and younger started with Kennedy, at least the focus on history. And hopefully this illuminates the Eisenhower presidency to a whole new crop of people.
So let's go back to that whole idea of the military-industrial complex. What Eisenhower was concerned about, having been a general, having been, you know, a West Point graduate, as I seem to recall, right? And a guy who was the supreme commander of the Allied forces and then went on to become a president of the United States. He was a guy who literally lived and worked in government his entire adult life. And he was very concerned that there was a war machine, essentially, an industrial war machine that made planes and guns and bullets and ships and all of those things, and that you needed to have those things expended, essentially, to continue to run those lines. And if you didn't continue to run those lines, then they would fail. And there was sort of a push-pull effect of creating conflict around the world so that you could use the stuff that you'd built so that you could have more just in case something really bad happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So some people looked at it as kind of an anti-war message. Eisenhower looked at it, however, you know, being a general but also a president who was craving peace, as something about our politics, that if you allowed these industries to have tentacles into our body politic, in other words, lobbying, money that funnels to these lawmakers, and then government officials who leave their jobs and go then head up a board on some defense contractor, that you create this cycle, this never-ending cycle that affects policy directly of how the U.S. is positioned around the world. Eisenhower's fear was that that would be self-fulfilling and they would make stupid decisions when it came to the world stage. He also, in that speech, was concerned about deficits and debt and mortgaging our children's future. He was concerned about bipartisanship, that it really should be the driving force, that both parties should strive to get things done that they can get done together and then argue about things that they have problems with, but clear the decks with what you can get done first. If you look at that speech, it's kind of a blueprint for where he thought America should go, and President Obama could deliver that speech tomorrow.
Yeah, it was a moment of cultural and historic pivot in America, January of 1961. you were heading off into a your first sort of the beginning of the baby boomer ascent, mm-hmm. if you will, into, even though JFK wasn't a baby boomer, JFK represented the hatless America. It was a a change of style and a change of substance, and America was a wealthy nation, now starring on the world stage as that, and as a technologically advanced nation, and seemed to be a moral leader as well. I mean, you know, wanted to take that role in a way, and it started with Eisenhower. I mean, it started with it had always sort of been, but we now looked at that as a after 20 years, if you will, after World War II. Started World War II for the United States, that in those intervening 20 years, the culture changed so significantly that we saw ourselves as the savior of the world, because not only did we do it in World War II, but it seems for the intervening 15 years, we did it as well.
Yeah. What Eisenhower was doing was sending a warning to Kennedy, saying, easy, killer, caution, balance, don't go too far, too fast. Make sure you have dissenting views inside, especially on national security issues. He was delivering kind of a sober message to the nation. You're right. The nation was anxious to turn to the matinee idol kind of look, the new urbane kind of future, the beautiful family and an aggressive stance,
right.
Especially in the wake of what they were seeing from the Soviet Union. And Eisenhower's message to Kennedy behind the scenes and in that speech was, make sure you have it all set up so that you can hear all sides. And the powerful thing about this book is that we find out all these nuggets that have never been released before, including when the President Kennedy takes over and in the first weeks, you know, has to confront the Bay of Pigs decision in Cuba, and it fails miserably, and that leads to the Cuban Missile Crisis. The first person he calls is former President Eisenhower, who he flies to Camp David.
Mm.
And that iconic image of them walking up the path with their hands behind them.
Yeah.
The quote, Kennedy turns to Eisenhower and says, you know, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be. And Eisenhower turns to Kennedy and with a smile, kind of the Kansas smile, and says, Mr. President, I think I told you that 3 months ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, my guess is those words are going to be spoken to Mar-a-Lago, not so much Camp David.
Well, I love the idea just that you're looking at the last 3 days of in office. I think that's a fascinating idea because I think it defines a lot about a president, about what they, how, their feelings at the very end, and the farewell address in particular, which we'll hear from President Obama here in Chicago tomorrow, describing his legacy and perhaps his vision for the future, and maybe even some advice for the future president. I don't know if he'll include that or not, or he'll keep that aside.
I think he probably will.
Yeah, you do? How do you do that in the right way?
I bet he has a reflection of hope and change, you know, from his original campaign slogan and kind of tries to get hopeful for the future. But I bet there's some warnings in there about inclusiveness, about, you know, Russia, about, you know, warnings that he drops into that farewell address.
I think, to me, I think like a lot of Americans and a lot of, babies of the Cold War, I have cognitive dissonance about Russia, because I know Russia is not communist Russia anymore. But what's really frightening is it's fascist Russia now. It is not.
Yeah.
It is, and there's no question about that. So it is a siding with a strong nationalist fascist totalitarian autocratic leader is it is disconcerting to me as an American.
Mm-hmm.
But what gets me even more is not even so much the politics of this, because it was a conservative win in a lot of ways, and there, you know, the whether it's Obamacare or it's national defense or building a wall or any of those kinds of things, I mean, those all fall within a basket of things that conservatives and the Republicans have been talking about for a long time, so it makes some sort of sense. What I don't get is the behavior. I don't understand his use of Twitter, the president-elect's use of Twitter. I don't see how that helps. I see it as a distraction, and when his own people have to fall over themselves, trip over themselves to explain it and say, yeah. Oh, it's going to be, no, it's okay. No, he's talking to the people that, you know, he wants to get around the media because, well, people want to get around the media, and that includes you, that includes Fox News, that includes everybody who may ask a question. Well, aren't our leaders supposed to stand for questions?
I would think so.
So one of the things, well, first of all, Eisenhower, I think, would say, get off Twitter. Less is more.
Eisenhower would say, what is Twitter?
Like,
I think that's what he would say.
First of all,
yeah.
Second of all, less is more. Words matter from the Oval Office. So we'll see how this evolves if, in fact, it continues. Eisenhower had this leadership style that political scientist Fred Greenstein called the hidden hand. In other words, he held his cards close to his vest. He's a legendary bridge player, and he let people kind of work behind the scenes, but didn't really put his marker down until he had to. And he found real power in that. Trump is exactly the opposite in that he throws everything out there. And sometimes his hidden hand, I think, is, you know, look at the shiny thing over here, Arnold Schwarzenegger's ratings, Meryl Streep's speech in the Golden Globes, but really something else is happening.
So it's a distraction to
administration or what a decision he's going to make.
So one would make the argument that yesterday, if we follow this, because there's been a lot of argumentation for the last number of weeks about him, is that it's the Jared Kushner announcement. But that lives separately. I mean, there's enough media to go around. But I guess what this really comes down to is, does the American body politic care at this point? It's been a long and brutal election cycle, very long. It seems like it's been over 2 years of the election cycle. And people are tired of it. It is a new actor on the scene. It is a change. And there's a lot of people who go, you know, so what? Who cares? Just let's get on with our lives. And that's the problem is the devil's in the details with that, which is he's got all these people coming up for confirmation, some of whom, you know, in other circumstances wouldn't pass muster, or the fact that the vetting has been slower than you know maybe it had been in the past, and in some other cases, all that you know that would be a big deal. People try to make a big deal about it, but now the outrage it was where the outrage was coming from the right. For decades, essentially, and now there's pacification on the right, and the outrage is coming from the left. And the right has always looked at the left as they're always outraged. It doesn't matter, right? They can't control their outrage.
I guess my question: well, should there be outrage? I mean, should the son-in-law Jared Kushner become a senior advisor? Is that something that would be difficult for people to digest with nepotism laws and things like that? Is that okay in your book?
Well, listen, I think they're going to be able to get around it. I think. The son-in-law thing, I think, is going to protect it. But, you know, remember Kennedy had his brother, Robert Kennedy, as Attorney General, I think.
And isn't that where the nepotism rules kind of became stronger?
From, yes.
Because of that whole thing?
See, that was right. See, that happened.
I think that I think he's going to – it's going to be like you're throwing everything all at once. And I talked to a senior Democrat who said, listen, we can't get apoplectic about everything. Otherwise, we're going to lose. Yeah. And, you know, they're going to have to pick out a couple of these confirmation nominees, some of these hearings, and zero in on them if they're really trying to make a point. There's a reason why it is a elephant gun approach to this confirmation process.
Pardon the
expression. There are all hearings happening at the same time. And, you know, we can only juggle so much as far as what the media can handle and what Congress can handle.
Right.
And I think that's part of the process.
All right. The book is called 3 Days in January, Dwight Eisenhower's Final Mission. Brett Baer is the author. He is also the chief political anchor for Fox. This just in.
Apparently not. Apparently he's been in for a while.
Where do people get the book right now?
Any bookseller has it as of tonight, but you can go to 3daysinjanuary.com. Okay. That's the book's website, spelled out, 3daysinjanuary.com. All the book sites are linkable on there. There's links there, and it gives you a little behind the scenes of the book and some pictures and history of why I did it.
Excellent. Awesome.
Awesome stuff.
Right, I know this has been a long time in the making. Congratulations on this. It's really
Thank you.
I know
I'm excited about it. Yeah. And in between that, we'll have the inauguration. So
what?
Interesting to see.
People, I need to hear it. I need to know these things. All right. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Brett.
We'll see you guys.
Bye. Violetta Potter Medic's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.